Hi, I'm Zuby from Magic with Zuby, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other reporters for this special episode, number 158 of the Starling Tribune, are Chris.
What I really want is to direct.
Definitely Mr. George Lucas. And Michelle.
My name is Phil. I am a full-time film student and part-time recreational drug user. Seriously regretting the latter.
Probably not regretting the latter in a few minutes when he has to go to a safe mind space. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, June 15th, 2017, live on geeks.live. That's an actual web address, people, geeks.live. If you type in www.geeks.live, it will take you to our live page. Remember, our newspaper is full of spoilers, facts, and speculations about Arrow and the rest of the DC TV, movie, and comic universe.
So tonight, folks, we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, and Constantine, and I will not list any more this time. Bet you all thought I would.
Yeah.
And Justice League Unlimited.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Thanks, everyone. Michelle, why don't you go down and break this episode down for us?
Sure. This week, we're talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is Legends Season 2, Episode 9. It originally aired Tuesday, January 24, 2017. Director, Dermot Downes, also directed 8 Flash, 5 Legends, 3 Arrow, 3 Supergirl, 2 of the originals, and 1 Gotham. Writers, Kito Shimizu, also has written 4 Legends, 11 Arrow, 1 Flash, 3 Being Human, and 7 of the Cape. Kito, we forgive you. All of us have those moments. And the other writer is Chris Fredeck. Written 5 Legends, 3 Forever, and created this show called Chuck.
Woohoo!
I don't know, maybe you've heard of it.
Awesome show.
It was awesome until it was pretty awesome all the way up until the last episode, and then I just hated it.
The last episode is not canon to me.
Head canon accepted. I like the way you think, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So when this episode aired, it was way back in January of this year, like 6 months ago, and it aired in its Tuesday time slot. I believe it was this the first Tuesday night?
Yes.
Okay, so Monday, Supergirl aired in its normal time spot on the CW network to a rating of 2.65. Later on, it almost doubled its Live Plus DVR ratings up to 4.13, and that was Supergirl Lives. On Tuesday, right before Legends of Tomorrow, The Flash, with Season 3, Episode 10, earned a live rating of 2.72, and you add in the DVR numbers, and it grew to 4.34, and its name was Borrowing Problems from the Future, which, you know, time-traveling Barry, always not a good idea. This show earned a live rating of 1.78, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then Wednesday, on the 25th of January, Arrow, the show that this show was started all about, earned a whopping live rating of 1.68 and a DVR boost to 2.82. And that was the episode, Who Are You? So following the Christmas holiday break, Arrow wasn't doing so hot. I believe the 200th episode of Invasion was its highlight for the year. So it's all downhill for Arrow, but Legends of Tomorrow was kicking it in, especially feeding off that good Flash vibes. All right, ratings are over. We're going to get right into the plot of this. Raiders of the Lost Art. That's art with a T, by the way, if my enunciation hasn't been good enough for you. Art, not arc. So, Michelle, what is the overall theme?
Well, in this episode, we meet George Lucas. And I can't believe they actually did a love letter to George Lucas. In this, George gets a little scared by a little laser gun that hits him in the arm, and he decides, that's it. I'm not going to make movies. I'm going to become an insurance agent in Modesto, California. And because he decides to not make any movies, that's the main inspiration for Ray and Nate. You know, Ray sees Star Wars and is like, I'm going to become an inventor. Nate sees Raiders of the Lost Art and says, I'm going to become an incredibly handsome historian. And without those, you know, it's that whole idea of just like one person, one piece of artwork can inspire millions of people to do different things. And without it, they just become bumbling idiots, you know, a heart surgeon and a yoga instructor.
You don't know what kind of impact George Lucas would have had had he been that award-winning insurance salesman in 1980, 81, and 82, or was it 81, 82, 83. Anyway, 3 years in a row, he was the insurance salesman of the year. That means that probably hundreds of people had the appropriate insurance for their needs in the future. So I think he would have had an impact in that position too.
But you know, guys, at least we wouldn't have gotten the prequels.
Hey, the prequels are not as, oh man, stop just crapping on the prequels.
I love trade negotiations. They're fun. Let's talk about trade. That was a shot at SP. Sorry.
That, I will admit, is definitely a bad part about The Phantom Menace. That's just not the headcanon for me. I go past that, and that's why the movie is okay to me.
Look, Revenge of the Sith is a good movie. We have to admit that. Come on.
I don't know. I've only seen it once. Have no desire to see it again.
Whoa, that's strong words right there.
You've heard him before, Chris. We've talked about this before, I believe, on this podcast.
The listeners might not have heard this before. They might not listen to the Gunna Geek Show. You should, so you can hear us make fun of SP's love of the Phantom Menace.
I like the Phantom Menace. Little Annie Skywalker, he's pretty cool. And the pod race, that's awesome. It's like NASCAR and Star Wars. I like it.
You know, here's the thing. Star Wars is literally one of my first memories. And because I actually saw it in theater. That's how old I am. And Princess Leia, I mean, just look at the cultural impact she had in everything. And like Star Wars, an original IP, you know, like who else could have brought us Princess Leia? You know, so the show makes a good point about his cultural impact.
Oh, it absolutely does. I was mostly just trolling by making my prequel jokes. I mean, you see this in real life when you talk to people in different science fields. You're like, I grew up watching Star Trek. Star Trek was what I grew up, the exploration of space, science, and thinking things through with your head instead of your fists all the time, potentially. It shapes a lot of people's views on things and what it is they want to do. So we've seen it in the real world, and you certainly see a representation of it in this show, and it rings true because it is a true thing. People take inspiration from things like Star Wars, from Star Trek, all sorts of things.
I like every time they reference George, they say his full name, George Lucas. They don't just say George. It's always George Lucas, George Lucas, George Lucas, come here. George Lucas, get something to brace this trash compactor. You know, it's always something that's George Lucas.
I really wonder if George Lucas watched this episode once he heard about the fact that they did like an homage to George Lucas in a time traveling episode of superheroes.
I'd hope so.
I mean, the dude's got a lot of free time now. I would hope so, too. Yeah.
He's got to count all those billions, SP. That takes time.
One penny at a time.
Yeah. I'll help, George.
So this was a great overall theme, but it's not the only thing that we look at for the show. We also look at the fight scenes and the stunts because, hey, we're an Arrow podcast and we're all about the fights. We're a street fighting podcast, not like the Marvel guys. We're DC guys over here. So Rip got tossed around the Wave Rider a little bit, right?
Yeah, we start basically in the first episode of this season where it's after the nuke hits the Wave Rider and everyone is already time scattered and it's getting beat around. And that was some pretty good effects. You know, he's getting tossed around and everything. So,
yeah, that was pretty good callback to where it all started from, which was good because we're like a half a year removed from that. So it was a good reset. And then we finally got to figure out what happened to him and his brain got scrambled and they're looking for the pieces of the Spear of Destiny, including the Holy Lance, which was awesome, by the way. Holy Lance.
This sounds like a Monty Python bit.
It does. Actually, I think it took until this viewing that threw him like Lance. Sarah Lance. Oh, yeah. Holy Lance. There you go. So it was good to see all that come full circle and to find out that the Wave Rider Gideon had to have 15 years to repair itself. And that's why everybody had to leave and not come back because the radiation and everything. So there was another fight outside the film set, which was conveniently like a dumpster driveway into the basement of the film school, in my opinion. So, Chris, what happened out there?
Hilarity. Assuming I'm on the right fight because they all blurn together to me. This is when people start forgetting things and it makes for hilariousness.
They haven't forgotten anything yet. So what happens is Damien Dark and Malcolm Merlyn come in and they see Rip Hunter and they think he's Rip Hunter. Well, he is Rip Hunter, but he is not Rip Hunter. Michelle, what is his name again? Phil?
Phil Gasmer.
Gasmer. So they see Phil Gasmer, who has no idea what's going on around him other than he's got this story that's stuck in his head, which he's trying to make into a movie as his film student thesis, which I think should be a major motion picture, but okay. And all of a sudden, the Legends show up as well, and it's just this big fight with people stealing up, and you got laser shooting back and forth, and it really scares George Lucas off. I mean, that's what stops him from continuing on in film school. He's done after this.
I love the fact that Merlyn and Dark have laser guns, though. I don't know why, but that just tickles me so much.
They played it up later on in the elevator, too.
I know, like, these guns must be, because it, like, goes up against the Wave Rider. I mean, they're like, ooh, look at those guns. And I just love how it's the Damien and Merlyn show. Like, these two are at the hip. You know, they're killing the bikers and all that type of stuff. And like, when they walk up and when they do their thing, I love how Rip is like, now these are villains. These are menacing.
You know that Neil McDonough and John Barrowman had to be having fun with this. I mean, it just looks like they're having fun as it's recorded. Imagine what it was like behind the scenes as they're gearing up for these.
And laser guns aren't their weapons of choice. I think they're only doing that because this is an episode with an homage to Star Wars. So they have gone into the future and come back with laser guns. Because Malcolm, he's still a bow and arrow guy. I mean, he's an archer. He's a League of Assassins. That's what his main weapon is, and Damien Dark to a certain extent is that as well. So this is, I think, is just opportunistic specifically for this episode.
I'm totally cool with it.
Me too.
And then there was another fight at the jail when they were trying to, well, okay, so Rip got himself arrested. I don't know if I agree with that, but as Neil would say, because plot. So Rip gets himself arrested and then the Legends have to go in and rescue him, but Malcolm and Damien also have that idea to go in. And then there's a fight that ensues, and Rip just really flips out.
It was great timing, because Sarah is like, you're the captain of the Wave Rider. It's a time ship. And then he's like, there's no such thing as a time ship. And then there's the Wave Rider, and then he faints.
Also, by the way, they're in the police station and there's this elevator. The elevator goes up to the top. So there's a parking garage on the top of all police stations. Is that right?
Sure.
Because plot.
What gets me is that the jail plan reminds me of that season one episode of when they're in the 50s where Stein is pretending to be a doctor and Sarah's pretending to be a nurse, because that's what they do here. Stein's a shrink, Sarah's like a nurse, Rory becomes the orderly who has to punch out Rip, Phil, in order to get him to cooperate. And that's how they talk their way in. Merlin kills the cop straight up and just they just walk in that way. Like, that's their style.
I know. It just comes in, kills the cop. And, you know, I was thinking the other cops around don't even budge when he falls to the floor. I mean, they're still at their desk just doing whatever they were doing, you know. The cop that's standing up at the reception desk or whatever, and then there's two cops right behind him at a real desk, and they just keep on sitting there as he falls over. I'm like, okay, well, maybe the dude has a fainting problem. I don't know. Maybe that's why he's behind a desk. I don't know, but that seems kind of weird to me. I'd be going up and asking if the dude needed help. Obviously, this police department isn't one that you would want to have in an emergency as a first responder, because whatever, there you go. So I just thought that was a little odd, but the battle at the top of the parking ramp was pretty cool indeed. And I'm just surprised more cars didn't get exploded because, well,
it's expensive, SP.
Yeah. A lot of laser fire going around. And then finally we had the trash compactor fight where a lot of stuff happens.
Oh, I love this, because you have Vixen, Ray, Nate, and George Lucas in the trash dumpster, because they have to find the piece of the spear, and towering over them is, again, Damien and Merlin. And so in order to motivate them, they get the trash thing going, and then Vixen's like, raise it, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is straight out of the movie. And then Merlin's like, they're not going fast enough, shoot one. And Damien's like, which one? And he's like, dealer's choice. It was fantastic.
And then, of course, they're saved by the people coming in the Wave Runner, which conveniently looks a little bit like the Millennium Falcon at the front. Just a little bit. I mean, it's not entirely.
Just a scotch.
So it comes in and basically saves the day. Nate is able to real steel up after they convinced George Lucas to become a director. And that was the quote that Chris said at the beginning of the episode. He said, I want to. What do you want, George Lucas? What do you want? I want to direct. That's what that was all about. So that was cool.
And just like that, Jedi popped back into existence.
That's right. And Nate was stealing up, and Ray had his little toy suit that he could suit up with, and it was all good there. But at the end, unfortunately, Rip gets kidnapped by Thawne, who's the speedster villain in the Legion of Doom, as they start calling it. And is this the first episode that they start calling it the Legion of Doom? I think it is, isn't it?
Yes, because Nate is doing his boombox and stuff, and they come in, and then he's like, yeah, blah, 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 Legion of Doom. And they look at him, and he's like, it's from a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
It was nice how they hand-waved that, by the way. It was from a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, because it is. It's what our generation remembers it as. So there you go. And, you know, lots of great fight happen. And then the sides went to their own sides. And we don't know where Thawne is holding up. But at the end, Rip is being tortured. And we don't know where, but we know now.
Or when.
Yes, because it's a when question as well as a where. So time travel. Michelle, we had a couple of eras that we went to. The first is New York, as we talked about with episode one.
Right. Because we learned that, because after, you know, everybody was like, well, where's Rip? Where's Rip? And we find out that Rip takes his part of the spear, and then he actually kind of shuts off Gideon a little bit because he has to touch the time drive part, and he's like basically electrocuting himself to make him go somewhere. And Stein says later that he could have gone anytime, anywhen, and stuff. So that was a really dangerous maneuver.
It was, but I think in his mind, he thought, where can I go that I would be safe? Where can I go? I know. I need to go meet George Lucas. That's what I need to do. So that's why he was sent there, because he wanted to meet George Lucas.
Well, who wouldn't?
Unfollowed by his mistakes, George Lucas.
What I want to know is how his experiences here changed the trilogy from what we know originally.
Oh, yeah. There could be some significant changes. Yeah.
That is interesting.
We don't actually get to see the movies at the end, but
that's because Disney would sue somebody.
We know the most important movie was made, and that was Howard the Duck.
Oh, my gosh. That was so funny. Said Howard the Duck. That was like the George Lucas's biggest flop ever. We talked about it over on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. We found some people that actually just adore the movie. I sent my movie away to somebody that for safekeeping, that somebody that actually wanted it. I never want to see that movie ever, ever again.
I never want to see that movie ever, period.
I like Howard the Duck in the Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, that's nice seeing him show up, but I don't want to see a whole movie of him. Definitely not back then. Leah Thompson couldn't even save that movie. Ugh. Anyway, Chris, the time travel also took us to 1967. We've been talking about it all along. How'd you like the timepiece of 1967?
I thought it was fun, but of course I'm going to be biased because they're playing with the backstory of George Lucas, who goes on to create some of my favorite movies of all time, so they can cram all these little Easter eggs and as best they can mention Star Wars without actually mentioning Star Wars in there. So I thought it worked well. It was a lot of fun going to 1967 over in California.
Yeah, and I love how they throw away the fact that they're all wearing coats at the beginning with Malcolm and Merlin saying something like, oh, so much for sunny California. You know they're shooting it in Vancouver.
Hey, they looked groovy, man.
Groovy.
Hey, have you spent much time in Southern California?
I used to live in Southern California.
How many times did you wear a jacket when you were living in Southern California?
Okay. So anytime I went to the beach, because when you go from day into evening, there's that breeze. And then sometimes in December, because in Southern California, you've got two seasons. You've got dry and you've got wet, and wet lasts about like, oh, you know, maybe a month. So, yeah, you wear a jacket to look stylish, basically. Don't. I packed away my sweaters and everything, like, rarely.
I used to travel out to California all the time, at least twice a month for business, if not three times a month. And I found that in the winter months, like January, February, when the storms roll through, that was generally, you know, 60s for the high, maybe 50s, that you need a jacket, but never anything like really cold, like 30 degrees or something, unless you were up in the mountains. But, you know, down in LA, there was no need for jackets for the most part. Just calling that out. And they did address it. It wasn't like they didn't address it. They did address it. Said so much for sunny California. Yep. What do you expect? You're in Vancouver.
You can only dress it up so much so that it looks like California.
I know, I know. And it's the same building, this film school that was used over and over for an education piece. So, you know, they have a limited budget, limited amount of places to go film. I think they're doing well with it. They can dress up anything with different cars, styles of clothes, and make any scene worth shooting in. All right. Let's go down a couple of the characters. Let's start with Captain Lance. What do you think of her performance, Michelle?
She is feeling comfortable being captain, you know, giving orders and making a plan. That's, you know, her plan to get Rip out basically works. I really like the scene with her and Rip, and she's frustrated because you're Rip Hunter. And he's like, I didn't do anything, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, she's like, no, you saved my life. You gave me purpose. And then he's like, he just doesn't know. And it was like, she's just like, remember.
Yeah, I have to say, given everybody that Sarah has been associated with, Rip is probably the one true mentor that she could look up to. And he's gone. And it just rips her apart, no pun intended. And she really wants that mentor back. And she's just not getting it. So, and she lets him go at the end because she just couldn't get to him in time before Thawne took him. So I think there's some issues there. Now, Neil, we haven't done this in a while. Neil, in the first season of Legends of Tomorrow, we rated Captain Rin Hunter on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm going to pull something on you guys. We haven't had a chance to think about it. So in this episode, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say that her performance was for the week? Michelle, I'm going to put you on the spot first.
I'm going to say an 8.
An 8? Okay, very good. We will add colorful characters next time that we do this, because this is a on-the-spot thing. So, Chris, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you see her performance as captain?
I was also thinking an 8, so I think we're on the same page here, Michelle. I'm going to rate her a Captain Morgan.
I'm going to say it's a 7 just because there was something going on in her ship that she didn't know about with Mick, and she let Rip go. So
she did not let him go.
I think she should have gotten to him, personally.
No, no. The way that it did, she was like, come on. And Rip was going, and then he's Phil, he gets all distracted and everything. And then, like, they're running up the ship, and then she's like, you know, Rip, and then he's like, oh, what? You want me to still go that way? And then he gets taken by Thawne. She doesn't let him go. You know, they do start running, and he starts, you know, he just gets all distracted, and like, what?
And then she doesn't really do anything with her boys, her inventor and her historian. She lets other people deal with that, which I would say is good delegation, but it's important for her to keep I'm not going to budge. I'm going to say 7, which is not a bad rating, by the way. We've had some awful captain ratings on this show with Rip Hunter.
She's much better than Rip.
Yeah, I think this episode proved that absolutely. So the boys, we'll do them together. We've got Ray and Nate, and they're dealing with their issues of losing their memory. I have to say with Ray, it kind of bugged me a little bit because it minimized heart surgery. And I think that's an important thing that has to happen.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's not very easy to become a heart surgeon. I understand why Nate would be like, these are just words. And he's, you know, a yoga instructor. I'm not saying yoga instructors are not intelligent, but he was big book of weird things. So that would make sense. But, you know, you're right. He just kind of, I don't know. He was acting more like, I don't know, someone who would work retail or something. Retail is like, you know, detailed, you know, and everything. And it's great. But the way he was just acting was like he didn't really know much about anything, and he was just kind of like working like a regular job or something. That's what I mean by that.
Right. Heart surgeons actually are very intelligent people. So,
oh, yeah.
There you go. So, this is just a little thing that bugged me there. Mick, we haven't talked about this much. This is a huge thing. This is Mick's arc throughout the entire season. He's seeing his buddy who's not with us anymore. And they think it's because there's a chip in his head. Turns out it's not. The whole therapy thing with Stein. This was a very touching part of the episode. Right, Chris?
It was. I mean, and I enjoyed the whole therapy thing. You know I'm not that kind of doctor, right?
And then he goes to break out Rip. Sarah asks him, you can play a shrink, right? And he's like, sure. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, why not? It's not like I was just doing it without you knowing. But I like seeing Rory go a little nuts or try to figure out why he's nuts in his own mind here.
I don't do stupid.
It was one of those things where, like Stein says, how could you not know people put a chip in? And he's like, Time Masters, you know, when I'm Kronos. And Stein's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And Rory has, it's like, it was like this, watching it again, I saw the look. I saw that expression on Rory's face. And it's like, because we know what happens after. And it's like, you think that's a little moment, but then take everything that Snart, which we find out is really like his innermost feelings. He doesn't know how to deal with feelings very well. Like, he started out a bad guy. He's Heatwave. And now he's on the ship and his best friend's dead and he became Kronos, but people seem to forget that he's Kronos. And one of the early jokes Stein says, you know, Roy says, you know, I think, you know, like I have an idea. And Stein says, well, that must be new. And it's still that whole Rory as the meathead when we all know that he's a lot more than that.
He doesn't want to admit it. He wants to be the thug, and that comes out a little bit in this, but, you know, he's dealing with it a little bit. Unfortunately, we see where the arc goes later on. But the other thing I want to point out is he is exhibiting increased signs of intelligence, and I don't know if that's how the writers were taking him, or is this a deliberate thing because he was Kronos? We've mentioned it before, we've talked about it before, but this is definitely a thing. Mick is not stupid. He is intelligent, and that's part of his character. And it really comes out in this season.
Agreed.
So the other thing to talk about is Jax, who I think the biggest thing he did in this episode is he counsels Sarah, and he tells Sarah that she is not a failure, which I think was very important.
It's something she needed to hear, as dispirited as she was starting to feel there, and Jax, for lack of a better term, you could say is almost the voice of innocence on there, because he is the youngest one there, kind of not been put in this kind of life until he got his superpowers.
And let's talk about Gideon, because Gideon should actually pipe up a lot more during the episode, during her interaction with the crew, because she's listening all the time. She's like your Amazon or Google thing, or now Apple in a few months. She's always listening. So why doesn't she just say something? Because she could solve so many things so quickly.
Because plot.
Oh, I liked how she was in this episode. I mean, first we find out she can carbon date things and she can find very interesting autopsy reports because she notices the bikers were killed League style. And she knows about the new timeline with George Lucas, the old timeline with George Lucas. She makes clothes, scans brains, helps Stein perform brain surgery. And she's like, you know, when Rey goes to fly the ship, she's like, oh, you know, Gideon does most of the work. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, I do. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, then it's all good. We can let Rey fly the ship if you're going to take care of most of it. Yeah, it was great. I did like Gideon in this episode, and I wish we get more of her. Absolutely. Now, we also learn a little bit more about the Spear of Destiny. We learn that it's been broken up into pieces. We're going after the one piece of the spear. Rip's got it. It's the MacGuffin, as he calls it. And we're now on a quest to get all the pieces of the spear. That's important to note.
We seek the Holy Grail, Holy Spear.
Yeah. And Legion of Doom, we've talked about them quite a bit. So, all right, I think we've come to the end of this. Michelle, do you have any last things that you want to talk about?
I really liked when Gideon and, well, Rip, thinking he's Phil, were alone. And he's like, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm nobody. And she goes, well, Rip Hunter was an ordinary guy, too. You know, he doesn't have superpowers. He had great courage, intelligence, and honor, and that's what made him a hero. And then Philip comes out, and he pretends to be Rip. And for a moment, you're like, wow. And then he holds up the gun, and then it's click, click, click. Wait, how does this work? I don't. Gideon, fire everything, Gideon, fire it.
I wanted to believe it so much. I was like, oh, I hope this is true. But I was like, it's too convenient for him to magically remember everything. But it's so cool. He gets his hero moment when he's not the hero again.
And he just doesn't know how to load his gun or turn it on or whatever. I don't know if that needs ammunition or it's power. I don't know. It was a cool moment indeed. And then Sarah was looking at him like, "What? Why is the gun not work? What? What is going on?
What is he doing? I don't understand.
Don't know what's happening." That was pretty cool. So, Chris, any last words about the episode?
I thought it was a ton of fun. This is the kind of show that I enjoy because it knows what it is. It's a popcorn show. You go and have fun. There's an overarching plot point. But this was all about having fun and playing with the concept of what happens if George Lucas isn't inspired to make those movies that everyone loves. It's a great little one-off, but still continues everything. I mean, I loved it. I had a blast.
When I think of season 2 of Legends Tomorrow, this is the episode I think about. I know a lot more happens during the season, but this is the iconic season 2 episode for me. So we will continue looking into Legends of Tomorrow next week, right, Michelle?
Yes, we're going to discuss season 2, episode 10, The Legion of Doom. It aired Tuesday, January 31st, 2017. The Legends must find the Spear of Destiny before they can rescue Rip, while Malcolm and Damien realize that Thons is pitting them against each other. Director Eric Lanuville and writers Philip Klemmer and Mark Guggenheim.
Ooh, the creators of the show. Phil Klemmer and Mark Guggenheim were on the pilot episode. So these are the big producers, big boys. Yeah. I think a lot's going to happen next week, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we got a couple of news stories for you. Direct from the main news desk at the Starlight Tribune, we have Michelle with some enticing information about how great The Mummy did this weekend.
No, actually. Guys, if you want to watch a mummy movie, 1999, Brendan Fraser, there you go. This is about how Wonder Woman beat a Tom Cruise movie. That's right. In her second weekend out, her numbers fell only 45% in its second weekend.
That's unheard of.
A lot of other superhero movies easily fall 60, 75%. That's including Thor, Avengers, and all that type of stuff. Her only falling 45% is really unheard of. So she crushed the Tom Cruise mummy. It's wonderful.
She got the Guardians bump from last year almost, which is people went to go see it in week one, then word of mouth came out, and everyone's like, this is really good, you gotta make sure you go see it, so it doesn't get a huge drop, and totally deserved, but also, the mummy is poop. It's just a poop movie.
Yeah, right. I had people in my office during the week, like Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, during the week, everybody's saying, you gotta go see this movie. They went to the movie, they took their wives, their girlfriends, their daughters, and they watched the movie during the week. This was amazing. And I can't wait to go see it again when I actually have time or buy the DVD. This might be one that I will get on the digital release. I have not done that with any movie yet, but I might see myself getting it there. So that is great news. Not great for Tom Cruise, because I don't wish the guy ill, but Wonder Woman, way to go.
He'll be fine. He'll make another Mission Impossible and everything's good.
So Michelle has another great news story, a couple actually, about the Legends of Tomorrow and casting information.
Yeah, so some news has come out about casting. So first off, Legends of Tomorrow cast Billy Zane as P.T. Barnum. So Billy Zane from Titanic, so this is going to reunite him with Victor Garber. And so Billy Zane has been tapped to play P.T. Barnum on Legends. The Titanic star will appear in one episode. Executive producer Phil Klimper offered up details. He said, obviously, we couldn't resist putting Victor Garber and Billy Zane back on screen for the first time since Titanic. But I've been wanting to bring Billy onto Legends ever since I saw him in Friends comedy pilot. One of the things that he said is that next season, they're going to look at famous figures from history. They're going to take what people think we know and then sort of twist it, finding different aspects of their personality. In other casting news, the show is going to add Tala Ash as a visitor from the future. She's going to be Zari Adriana Tomaz, a Muslim American woman from the year 2030. In her future, technological advances have brought about significant change to civilization, but humanity's fear, prejudice, and mistreatment of the planet have prompted her to become a gray hat hacktivist. Tomaz may be a computer nerd, but she doesn't yet realize she holds hidden powers derived from a mystical source.
Interesting. I love the diversity of the cast as the shows move forward in the superhero universe. So, Chris, we'll go back to you, and you have some other casting news of Legends of Tomorrow.
That's true. There were a lot of people that were worried that Vixen might not be in season 3. Well, fear not, despite not being explicitly mentioned in any of the publicity that came out for season 3, Maisie Richardson-Sellers will be back as a series regular next season. So yes, Vixen's still here.
Woohoo! Because she was awesome in this episode, so I'm definitely glad. We didn't talk a lot about her in this episode, but she was key getting the boys their powers back. She was key figuring out the little amulet. So, yeah, she definitely, the medallion. What is it called? Medallion, Michelle, help me out. What's it called that she figured out?
Oh, gosh. It's something. She figured out that it wasn't two, that it was one. And then when she saw that it was one, that led Nate to go, oh, it's the thing of the thing. And it leads to the thingamabob that is really bad because it could possibly rewrite reality.
Yeah, so the two pieces were actually one amulet. That's what she figured out. There you go.
Yes.
All right. I think that wraps up the news for this week. But if you like this content, we got a ton more for you over on the GunnaGeek.com network, don't we, Chris?
That's right, we do. Each week we try to highlight one specific show on the network. We got upwards of 20 shows on there, but each week we want to try and highlight one to give you a taste of something else and maybe, just maybe, convince you to be like, ooh, that sounds like something I want to hear about or learn more about. So this week, I'm going to talk to you guys about episode 179 of the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where they talk about the episode of Luke Cage entitled Now You're Mine. The Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. director Stargate Pioneer and Agent Haley discuss the Luke Cage episode Now You're Mine, the Marvel Netflix origins of the Night Nurse name. The agents also run down the Marvel news for the week, including a view into Chris Hemsworth's emotions over having to sit out Avengers Civil War, and listener feedback about a plea from Chloe Bennett for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5. So that is Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., which you can find over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And while you're there, feel free to check out any one of the other awesome podcasts on the network. Guys, we got some good stuff. Go check it out. GunnaGeekNetwork.com. But I think it is time for us to start wrapping things up, though. A big thank you to anyone who watched live or listened to any of the replays. Don't forget you can find them on our RSS feed over on GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Watch the replays on YouTube, or feel free to check out Spreaker for background episodes, too.
Tell your friends they can join us at our new day and time. Yes, Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Geeks.live starting June 25th, 2017. That will be our next episode. And don't forget to go over to your pod catcher of choice and rate and review and subscribe. I just want to say thank you very much to our editing team behind the scenes, which includes Chris and all the fans of the show.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunner Geek Network at GunnerGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Great episode, guys. That wraps us up for another week. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag stay in school.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Star Wars.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag bad acid trip. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.